Hi, everybody. I'm Debbie, and I am an alcoholic. And I am so glad to be here, I tell you. Thank you so much. And it was a beautiful drive here. My husband came with me. We don't get to spend a lot of time together. We're both real busy in AA. And so my sponsor told me that maybe he should ride with me, and I'm glad he did. It was a beautiful drive. My sobriety date is May 30th of 2006. That is not my first sobriety date. I hope to God it's my last. My home group is Speak on the Steps, and they meet in Richmond on Sunday night at 6:30. And I'm not there, but I've been told that when I've asked to do something in AA, I do it. So here I am. I have a sponsor. She's an awesome lady. She's in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I need to be because I have a really bad case of alcoholism. And we have a solution for that. I don't have just a little drinking problem. I have that, but just some crazy shit's going on in my head. Crazy stuff is going on in my head. And so I have a home group. I have a job in that home group. And the reason I tell you that is there's just some basic things we need to do, or at least I need to do. Now, I'm not going to speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't, but I'm just here to represent what Alcoholics Anonymous has done in my life. And I found there's just certain givens we got to do, and, you know, one of them is have a sponsor. And I like to have a sponsor that's in the middle of this deal, because I really need the whole deal in order for me to stay sober and to not take a drink again. I have a home group because that's what they say. You need to get a home group so you can be connected and be of service. So I have a job in that home group, and I show up to that home group other than if I'm speaking or if I'm really sick, which even when I'm sick, a lot of times I go. I mean, I just don't trust alcoholism. I cannot afford to play with this. I did before, and I drank again and almost didn't make it back, and I am so grateful. And I get a little nervous about speaking because, not that it's not about me, because, well, I think it is, but just I have a full knowledge of my condition and what this disease is, and it's scary. And it almost took me out, and I almost didn't make it back. And so I want to do the best job I can in delivering a message of hope of what Alcoholics Anonymous really is, because it wasn't what I thought it was for a long time. And I almost died, you know, and I've seen people die, and it really scares me. But what I do know is that God is so awesome. He's not going to give me, you know, I don't have any power, and he certainly isn't going to give me the responsibility of getting anybody drunk or getting anybody sober, so I just don't have that much power. But if I get a little disconcerted and jump all over the place, it's going to be following right along with how my mind is working these days. I don't know what it is with the holidays. I have found that as much as I hate structure, as much as I hate rules, as much as I hate ritual, because I, you know, had always been a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of girl, and I like living on the edge, that does not work real well for me anymore. I don't know if it's old age. I don't know if it's because I'm getting sober, but, you know, rituals work well for me. And with the holidays, the rituals, though I have still stayed in the center of AA, that's a given. That's just me. You know, I just have to do that. But just with all the extra stuff going on and us ladies that have to get the food ready, and I have an awesome, awesome husband who just does a lot. I mean, I'm really lucky. But just all the stress of the holidays and getting off schedule. I know this is recorded. Damn. That's today. Now, if you ask me tomorrow, it might be a whole other story. I mean, I am just now. My sponsor is real bad. She really gets on me about beating myself up. I'm not allowed to do that, but I'm just not well some days. You know, I mean, but anyway. So if I'm skipping around, it's because that's what's going on in my mind. But that's okay. It's you know, I accept that. But anyway, going back to just the basics, you know, having the home group for me, and I'm just sharing with you what works for me. I've tried a lot of different things. I've tried AA every way other than what, you know, people suggested, and I got drunk and almost died. So, you know, just the very givens of having a home group, being committed to that home group, having a job in it, and showing up there and making it my business to connect with other people has really enhanced my recovery. And then also with the sponsor, my relationship with my sponsor. It is my job. I don't trust my mind, and for good reason. So I make it my business to let her know my business. I stay current with her. I met with her this morning. I talk to her a lot on the phone. I, you know, try to follow her and do things with her. Because I want her to know what is really going on in my life and in my mind, which is rather embarrassing sometimes, because sometimes I just think I should be better than I am, that, you know, gosh, I'm 2.5 years old, I shouldn't be thinking this way. Well, who says? But she understands it. So when I shed the light on some of these things and share that with her, it does a couple of things. It lets her know where I am, so I don't have to wait till a crisis and call her, you know, and fix me. You know, she can offer me the principles, because she does live by these principles. I'm so blessed. I have an awesome sponsor who is in the middle of this a deal, and she lives these principles, and she shows me how to do that and how to live them in my life. And I'm very grateful for that, because I need all the help I can get. So I do that, so that way I can get the full benefit of what this deal has to offer. Because if she doesn't know what's going on in my life, then how can she help me? So, and then also sponsor women, and that is the greatest joy. I've been whiny lately because I am very selfish, and I really, you know that in order for me to stay sober, I must carry this message. And I really got that this time when I came back, that it tells us in the book, when all else fails, carry this message to another alcoholic. When the certain trials and low spots come about, and they will, what saves the day is carrying this message. So I've had a lot of people lately that ask me to sponsor them, but sometimes they'll call, sometimes they'll hang around for about 2 weeks, and then when it's time to get into the work and start going through the steps and, you know, keeping some commitments, they're out of here. So I'm at a point where I haven't had some willing souls, and that, you know, that I was talking to Bob about it. That helps me to continue to go through this book and to have a new experience with these steps at wherever I am in my recovery. So, but I know if I keep showing up and keep trying to stay in the middle of this deal, women come to me, and I have some newbies that I'm getting ready to get together. And also, it tells us to create the fellowship you create. And my husband started doing some stuff with some, you know, like halfway houses thing, and they're getting ready to open up a women's house. And one of my bright ideas, and I think this might be a good idea, because anytime it has anything to do with the big book, I'm going to start a big book study down there to get a group of gals, some of my sisters and other women, because I really have a thirst for continuing to grow and go through this book and follow the directions. So anyway, so I sponsor these women. You know, I try to keep my commitments. I try to, you know, I have committed meetings I go to. I'm very active, and my sponsor says I am. She says I'm in the middle of AA. And sometimes I need for someone to tell me that, because I like to base a lot of things on what I'm thinking or feeling or believing. And I have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, and my mind wants to tell me that I'm not good enough, you're not doing the deal, or also I want to, you know, like, base my recovery on what my sponsees are or are not doing, you know, and that's just not, it's not about me. It's, you know, me carrying this message, and what people do with it is really none of my business. So I'm fortunate that I've been willing, and it wasn't because I came in here one day and says, oh, I think I've got a drinky poo problem, let me go to AA. And I'm not one that walked in here and was like, I'm home. You know, I'm like, oh my God, it's come to this. This sucks, you know. So, anyway, let me get into this. So what I'm supposed to do is tell you, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Mine's kind of like what it was like, and what it was like, and what happened, what it was like, and what happened, and what it's like, and what happened. Because I'm a relapse, you know, that's not who I am today, but I was a relapser. I grew up in Owensboro, Kentucky. So if you're wondering, I say I'm from Richmond, people are like, You're from Richmond. That's a Kentucky accent. I think you take the girl out of Kentucky. You can't take the Kentucky out of the girl. That's why I'm so damn mean. You can ask Bob about that. But he must like it because he signed up for it, baby. Woo! So, anyway, I grew up in Owensboro. And now I want to tell you about my family. But, you know, what I have learned, it's, you know, I don't question why I'm an alcoholic or what made me an alcoholic. I just am one. And it wants to kill me, so it doesn't really matter. But I did grow up in a crazy alcoholic household. Now, I know friends that have no alcoholism at all in their family, and they're bad alcoholics just like me. But anyway, my dad was a boilermaker, and my mom was a housewife. I'm the youngest of three girls. And, I had a roof over my head, clothes to wear, that type of thing. I mean, so it wasn't like I'm, you know, I think I used to paint the picture a lot worse than it was. But, you know, my basic needs were met. But, you know, and from our own experience, when you grow up in a home where there's alcoholism, it affects you. And it certainly affected me. My dad, I remember just a lot of, he would work, you know, he was a boilermaker for 40 years, but he would, like, you know, work during the week, and then come Friday paycheck time, my mom would load us up in the car, and we'd go around all the bars looking for Dad, and he'd, you know, cash a check and drinking beer and, you know, all that type of thing, and then she'd, you know, drag him home, or he'd come home, and then he was a blackout drinker, and he was violent. So then the fights would start, and I'm talking, you know, beatings, knocking my mom's teeth out, putting fists through the wall, shotguns. I mean, it was real, Charlie Pride music in the background. You know, it was like a country western song I could have made out of this deal, you know. And then, you know, my other sisters had the sense to get out of the way. I was always trying to get in the middle to save my mom, save my dad, and, you know, a lot of that stuff affected me later on, but it was pretty scary. But anyway, they would always kiss and make up, and, you know, so I just walked around real confused all the time. And so that just went on. And what I found is so funny. I heard a speaker the other night in Richmond, and it helped me. I had an epiphany with how I didn't start drinking early on. Like, you know, my friend Val landed her first rehab at 15. I had a lot of successful years with drinking, and I used a lot of things to fill that God-shaped hole other than alcohol. I remember, you know, being so embarrassed by my family and different things, and I never felt right. So I don't know if I didn't feel right because I was already an alcoholic or just growing up in that environment. My dad, you know, like after drinks home, and he would be drunk or he'd be smoking a joint. I mean, he was wild. I mean, he was, you know, just a mess and just a lot of crazy things. And I was, like, straight as an arrow. I was like a goody girl, and you know, I could have done anything I wanted to do. My parents were drunk most of the time and not home, and you know, there weren't a lot of rules, and you know, but I chose this path of I would hook up with families and I would go to church a lot. You know, I think I was seeking even back then. And they would make fun of me, you know, and I would go to church, and you know, I was seeking something spiritual at that time. And then when I got into middle school, I was like, I'm 5'10", and then I weighed about 2 pounds. I mean, I was like, you know, tall and skinny and just stuck up heads above everybody. And, of course, you know, I started liking boys. I was the carpenter's dream, so nobody likes carpenter's dream, if anybody knows, you know, flat as a board, you know. I mean, I was skinny, ugly. And so what I decided then, and I think it was just the way of me dealing with whatever was going on in my house, I would look at people and say, I want to be normal. I want to fit in, you know. Like, I remember watching, you know, Leave it to Beaver and different things and just wanting so bad for my family to be normal. You know, there were all the secrets and all the scary stuff. And so I decided, you know, I look on the outside, like, cheerleaders. That's what I need to be, as a cheerleader, because guys like cheerleaders, they're popular. And so I made it my business to start practicing, and like I've tried out in middle school, and they're like, no, we don't think so. You know, cheerleaders are usually little short, little, you know, muscular little things. Well, I was so driven that, and I wanted that so bad because, again, the pattern of my life, something is going to fix me. If I get there, then I'm going to be okay. So I went with a vengeance, and I could see that till I got sober, looking back on that, being so, I mean, if my kid was doing stuff like I did back then, being so driven to get a goal, I'd like, you know, no, no, no. But anyway, I worked and worked. And I know this may sound silly about being a cheerleader, but it's just the whole overall thing of just, I had to have that so bad to fix the way I felt that I bit myself into a pretzel and worked hard and really became a fabulous cheerleader and had a long career with that and became all, but it wasn't just okay to be a cheerleader. I had to be all district cheerleader, which, like, they picked the best cheerleaders out of the whole region. And I'm from Kentucky, and basketball is king, and so is cheerleading. It's a sport there. And so it was very, I was an anomaly. It's very unusual, but I was so driven. And then I got into a lot of clubs. I was like the president of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and all this different stuff. And, you know, look on the outside, you would have thought, oh, she must come from a wonderful Christian home. Look what a good girl she is. And then I go home, and my dad's like, you know, I don't need to go there. But he was just, it was wild. So, through this work, I saw how that big black hole had already started me, and I filled it. And, you know, for me, I filled it with some things that looked okay on the surface. So I did that for a while, and then I ended up, you know, graduating from high school, and all my friends were going away to University of Kentucky, and I don't know what was going on, but I had some little boyfriend, and I said I was going to stay in town and go to the community college, and then we broke up, and then I ended up not going away to school, but I ended up moving up to Lexington, Kentucky. And I started drinking, you know, my very first drink was when I was 13 years old, and my dad bought me my bottle. I remember, and I don't know where this came, and that's why this is alcoholic. It's like, for some reason, I need alcohol because I'm going to a teen party, and I'm 13, and I'm tall, skinny, and ugly, and for some reason, alcohol is going to make me, like, more voluptuous or something. I don't know what I was thinking, but I wanted to fit in. So I remember, and this just shocked me. This was another thing when I got sober, when I started telling my story, I was like, my dad bought me alcohol? But I go to him, and he gets me, like, a thing of bourbon. And so I take it and get, like, a cherry Coke and pour the whole thing in it. Now, you know, so then I drink that. So I get to the teen party, and I see the little boy I like. But as soon as I saw him, the room starts spinning around. I pass out, black out, and threw up for, like, 2 weeks after that. I was deathly ill. So my very first drink, I drank alcoholically. I passed out and then threw up. So, but again, all this stuff that I wanted to fill that hole and make me, like, fit in and feel normal, I pursued that. And so I knew that if you drank, you couldn't be a cheerleader. And that was just way too important. So I think that's the only thing that saved me from, you know, getting to the bottle. But after all that was over, then I started drinking. So here's the deal. My drinking, you know, because I grew up in an alcoholic household, drinking was just a normal thing. But of course, I was never going to be like my dad, you know. I was never going to be an alcoholic because I always compare my alcoholism to a blackout drinker. So it was real hard for me to see my alcoholism because I always compared it to what I knew, and that was my dad. And you know, here's the net of it because I don't want to take forever. I don't want to stay drunk forever. I haven't gotten drunk yet, really. But anyway, I just, you know, pursued to go about my life, and I wanted to get out of my little town, move to Lexington, Kentucky, and just drinking with keg parties. I hung out with my college friends and all that. I was working. They were all in college. There were, you know, looking back on it now, there were a lot of blackouts. There was a lot of drinking, but it was just such a part of life. I didn't even see it as a problem. It's just what you did, you know. And some people do, and they grow out of it. But anyway, where the problem came, I continued on with my life. I'm a very driven person, which worked well in life. But when I came here, it almost killed me. I was able to, without having a college education, I was able to have some successes in business just because of my sheer, you know, self-propulsion through life, as the book talks about, and being driven and feeling so inadequate that I always, you know, I'm going to go to the ends of the earth to get what I think I need to make me okay. And so I ended up meeting a guy in Lexington, moving to Richmond. I married him when I was 26. We were married for about 5 years. Ended up getting into the telecom industry. That's where I met my husband, Bob, and was able to get in sales and marketing. And a lot of you know me, I'm kind of an extrovert, so it's, you know, whatever college I didn't have, it's certainly the sales and marketing. I had a lot of success in that because of, I guess, being so driven, and I'm able to, you know, I like people and an extrovert and all that kind of stuff. So my drinking just is just a big part of my life. I drink every day. I'm still able to go to work. And in sales and marketing, there's a lot of drinking that goes on anyway. So my drinking didn't look any different than anybody else's. We work for AT&T. So I go to work for AT&T. When I'm about 30-ish or so, I end up separating from this guy. And then that's when I met Mr. Sangsta. And we were good friends. And we ended up falling in love. And but there was a lot of drinking, a lot of happy hours, a lot of, I had a lot of fun with drinking, you know. I mean, that's one of the problems of being an alcoholic. I had a lot of successful years of drinking. That's why I was like, damn, I'm not going to give this up. I mean, you know, I didn't come out of the gate having a lot of consequences. I did get like a DUI in 86, and, you know, I was like, whatever, and that didn't even affect me at all. They didn't send you to AA then. But anyway, so fast forward, what starts happening is, you know, this guy I was married to, he was a great guy. We just were like brother. We had no business getting married. We didn't have any children together. We're still friendly with each other, you know, it wasn't any big deal. But then got with Bob, and then we got married in 93, and we were drinking buddies. We had a lot of fun with her drinking. I remember during the course of our dating and everything, we realized maybe we were drinking too much. Was that before or after we were married, when we did that, tried to quit drinking? We can't remember because we drank every day. You know, what every day looked like was, you know, happy hour and then come home at night and we would drink and, you know, all that. So I do know that we were a little concerned about our drinking. We thought maybe we should slow down, and that lasted for about an hour or something. I don't know. He held up the end of the deal, because I remember we went to a party, Sir Don and Kelly, and we weren't going to drink. And so we were there, and people were drinking, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea. So he saw me with a drink in my hand, and he said, well, what happened? I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a drink now. Then we forgot the no drinking thing. So that's the only time I know of that we tried to stop drinking until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, so, but what happened, here is where, you know, we crossed that line or whatever. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, I began developing a lot of mental disorders. I started having a lot of really bad panic attacks. And let me back up a little bit, because this is part of my story. Since I've been 9 years old, I had severe panic anxiety disorder. I'm talking about the kind where, not a little generalized anxiety disorder, as I've been diagnosed with too, but the kind where you just fall apart and you have to be rushed to the emergency room because you think you're dying. And I think my friend Val helped me to see that that is part of my alcoholism, though it was hard for me to see because it started when I was 9. I wasn't drinking when I was 9. But again, the disease of the alcoholism, and I don't know why, but it almost killed me too. So, anyway. And you'll learn why in a few minutes. But so what happened is, drink is a part of my life. I'm having fun with drinking, but all of a sudden, you know, I get the gorgeous man here who, you know, I adore. But now I'm like, you know, I need a house. So we did a lot, build my dream home, our dream home. Now I need a baby. So we, you know, I started having these things, and like, you know, something's not right, you know, you're not good enough, you're depressed, there's something you need. And so when there's something I need, and it is about me feeling good, you know, I'm going to go get it. And that worked for me for a lot of years. It does not work anymore. But anyway, we got something better here than that. All that stuff was pretty superficial. But anyway, so I, you know, where I really turned the corner was after I had our wonderful son, who's now 14 and a half years old, and I adore him. I started getting really depressed and really anxious. And I looked at my life and I was like, you know, I've got a great job with AT&T. I'm making great money. I've got a wonderful husband. I've got a wonderful home. And now I have this precious baby. Oh, my God, what is wrong with me? You know. Well, I went to the doctor. He said, oh, that's delayed postpartum depression. Here, take this. I'm like, oh, okay. So that began my psychotropic phase. And so that didn't make it better. So then, well, they're like, well, you need to go see this psychiatrist and get these other pills. I'm like, oh, okay. So I started getting diagnosed with different labels of, you know, all kinds of stuff. But the main was, you know, depression and panic anxiety disorder and generalized anxiety disorder and anticipatory anxiety and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, it's a mess. So anyway, I start taking all these pills. Well, that's not enough, so they suggest I do some talk therapy. So I start going to this woman and start talking about my deep-rooted issues and all my family of origin. And I mean, when I sit down and tell people my story about what my family's really like, you know, hell, no wonder you're messy. You know, I mean, she's like, yeah, you got problems. Here, take another pill. You know, I'm like, okay. So anyway, while this is going on, here's what's going on really, is I am so baffled and confused that just those happy hours we're having, they ain't doing it anymore. I need more booze. That's what works, you know. So I'm just obviously not drinking enough, so I need to drink more. But, you know, when you start drinking more, then, you know, even he's drinking with me, he's like, kind of like, people start telling me I'm drinking a little bit too much, and they're heavy drinkers. I'm like, So I need to start hiding it. So, you know, I always drink, lunch, it all night, but it slowly progressed to, not slowly, I had to start having the morning drink. You know, it talks about in the book the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I cannot handle that. You know, like I would wake up after I threw up and, you know, my mind is just full of terror. I've got the shakes. I'm sick from drinking the night before. And, you know, I need another drink. And so my drinking always takes me to the morning drink. Then here's my alcoholism. I love this part in the book. It says we are restless, irritable, and discontent. And then also all the terror, you know, until we can once again experience the ease and comfort that comes at once by taking that drink. Booze was the solution to that restless, irritable, discontent, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. I had no other way to deal with that. And I was taking some psychotropics. They weren't helping. It was all getting worse. And I got scared. So what happened was, you know, I'm drinking more and more. He's starting to say something to me about it. Seeing a psychiatrist, he mentions, maybe you're drinking. No, I'm a social drinker. He said, maybe you should go to AA, because I think he saw that, you know, I probably went there at the shakes, and I was really offended that he told me to go to AA. I mean, I really, you know, wanted somebody to just fix me. I'm paying you, and don't, you know, my vision of AA was that it was old Ben Leonard or Brit. I mean, where I got that from, I don't know, but, you know, that wasn't up for discussion. So what happened, because I am an alcoholic and it gets worse, never better, and then they, you know, throw some benzos. Benzos and booze are not a good combination. They will take your ass down fast. I mean, it took me down fast. I end up one day realizing that, you know, this is how I was drinking. I would have to get up in the morning and drink, and this is when he was still drinking, so we had a liquor cabinet, so I had to really be creative so he wouldn't see how much I was drinking. But I would drink, after I finished throwing up, I would make a orange juice and vodka, because in my mind, the orange juice, my God, I'm drinking orange juice. But I would try not to pay attention that was vodka in there, just to kind of, you know, get my feeling, like, just so I could feel like I could stand on this earth. Then I would drink about two or three, four rum drinks, and then I would drink a Bloody Mary, because that got me pumped up and going. Then I would drink about a 12-pack. And then I kind of zone out. Now, here's the deal. I was working from home. I was in sales and marketing. I was working from home. I was really doing a lot of work. I was working trying to, you know, like, get alcohol in my body. And then I would kind of get it together for him to come home from work and have his martini wait for him and pour me a glass of wine like I had just started drinking. And I'd been drunk all day. So then I'd get that martini him quick so he won't maybe notice that I'm already drunk. And then I would drink a big bottle of Chardonnay, and then I would usually start in on red wine, and then, remember how you used to drink all the apricot brandy and you get something? And then all that wine would get, you know, ew, and I would start drinking apricot brandy, and that's how I like to drink. And so I would do that, and then I would have to drink the next day because I would be so afraid. So, and I'm doing that and taking Clonopin, which is very dangerous. I'm lucky to be alive. That could kill you. So so anyway, I look around and realize, you know what, this isn't good. I am drinking vodka in the morning. I had one of those moments of clarity. I'm like, I'm scared to death. I need to get up and get out of the house. I worked for AT&T at the time, and they had a drop-in office that we could go to. Like, you could work from home, but if you wanted to come work to the office and get secretarial support and all that, you could. So I thought, I need to start getting over to the office, and that way I won't drink. I got myself together, looked in the mirror, I'm all bloated, and I'm looking in the mirror like, okay, let me go into the office. And all I could do was get up to the ABC store and get my own personal bottle of vodka so he wouldn't notice how much I was drinking. That was my best effort. So I got home from that little trip to the store thinking, okay, I have fallen apart, let me get a drink, then I can think straight and figure out what I'm going to do today. I could not get that feeling, that sense of ease and comfort that always came when I take a drink, you know, where you're like... And then you take the drink, and it kind of gives you a little, you know, see, I see your smile, and you know what I'm talking about. You know, like, crazy, and then, okay, now it's going to be okay. Couldn't get that. It just kept getting worse. I couldn't get a buzz. I freaked out. I started calling people. I mean, so somehow, I don't even know how, but when I called my mother-in-law, oh, my God. I had to be a crazy, and I ended up going to Tucker's, because she's a teetotaler, she hates drinking, but I was so desperate, I was scared, because my medicine wasn't working, that stuff that I'd always depended on to help me, and take away the big scare and all that. I could not get a buzz, and that freaked me out. That was horrible. So I ended up at Tucker's, and I thought they were going to tell me I was having a nervous breakdown, because, you know, it's always, they're always throwing these mental things, as this must be the big nervous breakdown. And I'm like, oh, good, they'll put me in the hospital, probably let me stay here for a couple weeks and treat me nice and feed me, and I can get a break from my life, and then I'm going to be okay. No, I go in there, they process me, take me up to the second floor, and I said, what's wrong? They're like, you're an alcoholic. I'm like, what? No, I'm not. I've got a house and two cars, you know. I mean, like, that is how ignorant I was. Like, alcoholism cares. So, anyway, the great thing about that, I went there and Bob was out on a golf outing. We have a, let's see, that was in 96. Rice was born. So our child's like, maybe, let's see, May 94, that was August. So he was a little over 2 years old. He was at the sitter. I mean, my little stepson was supposed to come over. He may have been, I don't know. I cannot remember, but I know whatever I was supposed to be doing with the kids wasn't happening. I was in the psych ward. And he comes home, can't find anybody, doesn't know what's going on, and then he finds out that I'm at Tucker's. So that's where we were first introduced to recovery. And so I go in there, and I stay there for 10 days. They didn't do, like, the rehab, but they had to detox me off the Clonopin and the booze, and they told me how dangerous it was and, you know, how, you know, all that stuff. And that's where I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember just being, you know, I just hate it when I look back. It's really embarrassing to see how, you know, superficial and arrogant and stupid you are, you know, but that's just the way it was. I mean, I just hate it, but I just judge things, you know, and I still can, but anyway, I'm getting better. But, you know, I remember that since I didn't have, you know, a real full social schedule since I was up in the psych ward, you know, I thought, well, maybe I'll grace them with my presence and go to this AA meeting, though I can't understand what, because I saw some old dudes come in, you know, I'm like, yeah, right, what do they have that I need? And, And I went there to that meeting, and it, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, that guy there that doesn't look anything like me is talking, you know, I heard that, you know, like they, you know, that way I felt, because I felt crazy. I mean, I just thought I was just plumb crazy or, you know, on my mental diagnosis, but they were talking about something I could relate to. So it piqued my interest enough. And, you know, when you're up in a psych ward, and I carry the message, I take meetings up to psych wards now, and I know, you know, you have to talk slow, and, I mean, you're just out of it. They just load you up on stuff up there. So, you know, but I heard something. You know, this message is, if we carry a clear message, I don't care how messed up you are, it, you know, God plants hope, and he plants some hope, and it scared me enough to want to come to AA. So, you know, so I left there, and I was scared enough because, you know, it wasn't so much that I wanted to stop drinking. I didn't know what I wanted. I just wanted to feel better, but I knew that booze wouldn't work anymore, and I was afraid to, like, God, you know, if it was this bad, then, you know, like, what am I going to do now? So I might as well go to AA and see what's going on there. So I did, and I was very attracted to it as far as, you know, I've been very blessed. I've had the best sponsors that AA has to offer. I've always been involved in groups that are active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, Val and Sammy and Christy, three of the strongest women I know in Alcoholics Anonymous, have been my sponsors, you know, and so I was attracted to that. But I didn't think I was talking to Bob about this too. Can you tell when people aren't ready? They're like, well, you people, you know, I am you people. You are my people, you know. But when somebody says, well, you people, I'm like, oh, they're not ready. Okay. But anyway, so I came in and was attracted to it. But I don't know what else. I was just so full of, you know, my crap that I had been doing all my life. And I ended up coming around for about a year and a half. I think I was almost 9 months sober in relapse. But what I wanted to do was focus on him. He was the problem. Because I stopped drinking. How dare him drink in front of me? I'm a poor little alcoholic and blah, blah, blah. And he's being mean, blah, 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 blah. So, I have this one nice sponsor, and she did kind of listen to my stuff. Her grand sponsor was Sammy, and she pulled in Sammy, and Sammy's kind of like, okay. And, you know, I just was like, forget these people. And I remember I just left. I was like, you know what, they're getting up in my business. They're trying to tell me. What I wanted was somebody just to listen to my bull crap, and I wanted to do what was convenient for me. I wanted to do it when I felt like it. And I have to tell you this is where I was. And this is the great change in my life, you know. I mean, I had this wonderful sponsor, and you know, she told me to, you know, get a home group, So I remember thinking, you know, because of the results, the fruits of our recovery, which, by the way, will take you out if you aren't careful, you know, my legs are getting better. I wouldn't poop anymore. I was losing weight. I was showing up for work. I was doing a good job. You know, things were better in my life. So I'm getting all busy all of a sudden. So my thinking is, well, she wants me to come to this meeting, but, you know, they read that same thing every time. I'm going to get there about 8:10 because I am so busy, and I don't need to hear that, how it works. I know that stuff. So I would show up late. And so after the meeting, she said, you know, why don't you try coming 15 minutes early so you can, you know, connect with people, get to know people. And, you know, and I looked at her and said, you know what, you're lucky I'm even here. I am busy. I did. Isn't that hysterical? And don't think I don't get sponsees like that. But anyway, so, you know, that and she just looked at me. And so, anyway, what happened was I didn't last. I mean, you know, I drank. Of course I drank. And it got worse. And I stayed up for 11 months. And my drinking again in a short period of time was, again, back to the morning drinking, you know, the rum, the vodka, the 12-pack of beer, all the wine, and apricot brandy, you know, day in and day out, getting more and more depressed, taking more pills, and just, you know, and I really want to die. And on November the 12th, 1998, a girlfriend called me. I heard him say, I don't know what to do. She's drinking herself to death. And I started to go upstairs, and like, I was going to give it to him. And instead, I was like, oh, my God, he's right. I dropped to my knees, and I said, God, please help me. And I believe when we honestly ask God to help us, he does. And I meant it. And the next day, I called a gal, in AA, they had knew I was out and had been calling me. And I knew somehow that this could not continue. I was miserable. I wanted to die. I couldn't stop drinking. Everything was a mess. And I called her and I said, I need help. And I knew that she went to Jaywalkers. I said, I know she's going to tell me to, like, not drink. So if I knew how to not drink, I wouldn't need you all. You know, she's going to tell me to be here at the Jaywalkers to pick up a white chip. And I'm not going to make it. I'm coming apart. And I must have a drink. But what happened is I called her. She said, I'll be right there. God, I mean, that was awesome. She came down and she 12-stepped me and stayed with me for the day. And I have to say that at that point, it was bad. She was my sponsor. And it was an awesome experience. And I stayed sober for 6 years and 3 days. And what happened is I was desperate and I was willing and I had a great sponsor. And, boy, she wouldn't put up with my crap. I started talking about him and wanted to focus on him. She said, you know what? I love it. She said, who picked him? Well, you know, here's the deal. And y'all know Val. She's like that. Well, she said, you know what? You're about one of the sickest alcoholics I've ever seen. I don't think we need to be worrying about him. Let's just worry about you and what you're doing, these 12 steps. And you keep focused on that. And you need to be civil and considerate. She started getting me into the principles and practicing this. You know, because she saved my life. She really did. Because I wanted to focus on anybody. It was everybody else's fault but mine. I didn't want to take responsibility for my life or for my alcoholism. If it's your fault, if it's the boss, the husband, the family of origin, my mommy, you know, whatever, I don't have to step plate and take responsibility for my life. And so she gave me that advice, and man, and she's a big, tall woman, and I was scared. I was like, yes, ma'am. And after that, things started changing. So what happened is, rather than me focusing on him, I started focusing on what I needed to do. And she took me through the steps. She's a big book girl. You know, she showed me what being in the middle of the circle and triangle is, being in all three, you know, are you in AA or are you out? You know, are you doing, you know, there's just basics you need to do. And so she showed me how to do that. You know, getting in the home group, being on time, being willing to carry this message, you know, working the steps with a sponsor and, you know, all the different things we do. And so my life started getting better and he started noticing. I stopped talking about his drinking. As a matter of fact, the obsession to drink was taken away during that course because I was getting involved in AA and being sponsored and being willing to work with my sponsor. It allowed him to hit the bottom he needed to do. The more that I talked and focused on his drinking, the sicker I got, the sicker he got. I took her suggestions and left him alone. And it even got to a point where he would come in because he was trying to support me in my recovery and trying not to drink. But he was so unbearable to be around. I wanted him to drink, and I didn't know how to tell him that I wanted him to drink when I said, don't drink anymore in the house. I was like, please have a drink. And because, you know, he walked in, it was like a big black storm, you know. And then I had told him, because, see, I always compare, you know, like I compare my alcoholism to him. And Bob was the type of drinker that he would drink massive quantities, but he still got up at 6 in the morning, conducted his business, and did, you know, his life didn't look as unmanageable as mine did. And so I didn't know, but the night that he came in and was trying not to drink and just, I mean, it was like a big thunderstorm around him. And then, you know, he's like, do you have a drink? I'm like, no, go ahead and have a drink. And I think I was getting ready to run off to a meeting anyway. And then that switch, you know, just when he was like a different person, I was like, holy shit, he's an alcoholic. You know, because I had learned some things in the book, you know, where it talks about our state of being. You know, not just our drinking, but our state of being. You know, I'm restless, irritable, discontent. You know, on page 52 where it talks about we're prey to misery and depression. You know, I can't make a living. I'm having, you know, problems with personal relationships, all that stuff. I mean, that's me. That's my alcoholism. So where was I? Okay, so I'm drunk and I'm sober now for the 6 year period. So anyway, it was beautiful. I got very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was very attractive to him. He hit his bottom. He got sober in February 2000. Yeah. So it was very cool. We were very active in Alcoholics Anonymous. About 3.5 years, I started having my mental disorders again. And, you know, and what I know now that, you know, like if just not drinking was my problem, I mean, if drinking was just my problem, then why did I drink again? I've got a whole other stuff going on here with alcoholism. I know that today. And mine shows up as, you know, depression and anxiety and something that I think I need a pill or some doctor to fix me. What I know now, there is no pill that can fix me. Now, please don't think that I'm saying that people that do have those things, the pills do work. They don't work for me. If they did, then, you know, that would have taken care of all those mental diagnoses. They only made them worse, you know, for me. That's what I know about me today. Please don't think I'm anti-whatever. I'm not. I have no opinion on that. I'm just giving you my experience. I want to make sure that's clear. But anyway, so I am struggling, and so I decided that this sponsor, Val, is just, you know, she just doesn't quite understand me much anymore, and I need to get another sponsor. So I fired her and went with another sponsor, and then at 5 years sober, me running the show and me trying to feel better on my own, and being not willing to really surrender to this, what we do here, this deal here, I end up in a psych ward for 5 days with a horrible, horrible panic attack, so that I had to go to the hospital, and they put me in the hospital. Then that's where the beginning and the end was for me. I was so defeated, and I thought that AA didn't work because of the way I was feeling. And I'd done the deal. I'd sponsored the women. I'd spoken things and different. But, you know, I always held a piece of me back. It's like, you know, I guess being the people pleaser, which thank God that's getting better. like, you know, I was treating this as a assignment or going for, like, I'm going to get an A and I'm going to be the best A. And it's all about what it looks like, you know, how many sponsees I had and if I'm at the right meeting and if I'm saying the right thing in the meeting and blah, blah. You know, it all looked good on paper. I mean, it would have looked like, you know, the day before I ended up in a psych ward that I was a really strong, good AA. But if you really knew what was going on inside, you know, and how I'm trying to manage that and just not willing to really surrender and not really let you in and really being willing to walk through being uncomfortable. Like, I'm willing to do this as long as I'm comfortable. If I start getting uncomfortable, I need a pill or something to, well, I can't drink anymore, so let me have a pill for God's sake, you know, or a new job or a new hairdo or a new outfit. Or a new car, or a facelift. I don't even want to go there. I don't even. That won't work either. Believe me, I know. But you know, something. I mean, you know, I love how Bob Darrell puts it. You know, we come in here and do this, and I'm expecting. What Bob Darrell would say, here's my thing. Like, I come in here and do this, and this is in my life, and I want some type of prize for doing what I should be doing anyway. It's like, okay, I've been a good AA, I'm trudging the road of happy destiny, I'm sponsoring these women, I'm doing this, I'm doing, you know, my little checklist of what y'all say, and then I think I'm supposed to feel good all the time. You know, so if I have that belief, then if I don't feel good, then it must be that your old deal doesn't work. Or I'm just too bad, or God doesn't like me enough. And I think that's what I started thinking. So I'll take matters in my own hands. Yes, I will take some Klonopin and all that other stuff. They started diagnosing me with bipolar. I mean, I was on 7 different meds. There are 2 years of my life I don't remember. I drank for 4 months of the relapse. I do not recall my life. And I'm telling you, that's how dangerous that shit is. And I'm telling, I get very passionate about it because I'm so sick. I didn't know I was so sick. And I remember Val trying to come in. I was mad at her, but she cared enough about me. I talked bad about her. Because anybody, and I found this to be true, when we get sick in AA, and then we go out and drink, the very people that love us the most that try to help us are the ones we are going to attack. Because they represent the truth, and I can't stand the truth. It's got to be you. It can't be me. And, boy, I was so ugly to all these wonderful women that tried to help me. And, man, I tell you, it was bad. But I remember her coming over and looking at me, and I was isolating more and more. And I didn't realize it. And I started having all these physical illnesses and all kinds of crap going on. They had me on so many pills. I had a period of time where I could not use the bathroom for 2 weeks. I didn't know what was wrong. I went to the emergency room. They shot me up with morphine. They're like, you're getting ready to start, you know, like, throwing up poop. And I'm like, they're like, this is serious. I'm like, oh, And so finally Bob took me to his doctor, and they did a colonoscopy or whatever. And he said, you know, Miss Sainster, I think maybe it's all those pills you're on. Oh, no, you know. But anyway, it was scary. So I was really, my body was shutting down, you know, and I couldn't see it. I could not see it. And so what happened is 3 days after my 6-year anniversary, I was at Pockets of Enthusiasm that weekend. I am in La La Land. There ain't nobody home. But again, you know, compared to a lot of people, I look like I've shown up to meetings and, you know, I think I still had a couple of sponsors. A lot of them left me. But, you know, it looked okay, but I was really sick. And I drank 3 days after my 6-year anniversary. And, man, that's when the madness really started. It's all kind of a blur, but the net of it is here. You know, you would think that after not drinking alcohol for 6 years that you could maybe get away with it for a few days. No, believe them when they say this is a chronic, progressive, fatal. That means even though the only thing I can do is abstain and not drink the alcohol to keep the physical part of it, but my alcohol and my body did not know I had been drinking. It picked right back. It was worse. It was like I had been drinking for 6 years. I went down quick. And at the end, I could not differentiate the true from the false. I was insane. I isolated myself. Bob was out in Vancouver, British Columbia at the job. I'm there with our son, who's like in between summer, 5th and 6th grade, he's running around. I mean, I don't even hardly know what, I don't know what was going on. I just was so messed up. And at the end, I was drinking. I had to have alcohol in my system so bad. I could not walk from the kitchen to the bathroom without a drink. I had a drink in my hand all the time. And at the end, I couldn't even go to sleep. I was waking up drinking red wine. I wasn't waking up. I was not going to sleep. I would set up all night. I could not get away from it. I had to have it. I kept trying to go to AA to pick up a white chip. I couldn't make the meeting. I had to stop and get a six-pack pulled to the side of the road. Alcohol, I mean, I'm telling you, I know what being powerless over alcohol is. When you want to be sober and you don't want to drink like that, and you know that people in AA don't drink, and you want to go to that meeting, you want to pick up that white chip, and you can't pull that off. My thing was, you know what? I will drink for a while. I was sober in AA for 6 years. I sponsored women. I know that book. I will go drink for a while, and then I'll get sober when I want to. By the grace of God, thank God. I mean, what happened was I had holed myself up. Some people from church that are in recovery knew I was drinking. I put in a call, said, I'm drinking, I can't stop. I had just got everybody from AA out of my life. They came over, and I thought they were coming over to help me. We were packing up our house. I was supposed to be packing our house up to move while Bob was out in Vancouver. They packed me up, all right. They took me to the hospital where they kept me for 5 days, and I was in bad shape, and Bob had to come back from Vancouver. We had to ship my stuff. I mean, it was a mess, and they suggested I go to rehab. I didn't want to go. I'm so grateful I did. I went to rehab to Father Martin's Ashley for 28 days, and it was after being in the hospital for 5 days, and I have my picture from when they took my picture when I came into Father Martin's. I was trying to hold my eyes wide open. I was like this. My face was this big. My eyes were like that, and I was holding wide open. I was a mess. I was swollen out to here. My ankles were this big. I was dying, and 2 weeks of that rehab is when I finally, because they detoxed you me off, you know, the Klonopin and all the other stuff, and the booze, and I woke, and I shivered and cried and was horrified all day, because I finally came to and saw I was so sick, I almost died. I mean, I did, and I have friends that have died, but what was so scary was I didn't know it. Because the delusion and the power of alcohol. So, today, you know, I don't mess around with it. I'm as serious as a heart attack. Most people that know me, they say, you are a different person. What you're seeing is somebody that is surrendered. Is my day every day great? No. I have some really crappy days because I have a mind that just wants to, you know, in the book where it talks about we were prey to misery and depression, that's my default position. I have to really, and plus, you know, I know you guys don't like it, but I am a 49-year-old menopausal woman, so you talk about another level of restless, irritable, and discontent, you know, so I've got that going on. But, you know, my sponsor's taught me to, she has to tell me, she said, you are in the middle of AA. She has to tell me I'm doing okay, because I want to base everything on what I feel, and if I don't feel good, then that must be I'm not doing something right, but I am. I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I show up. Even if I don't feel like it, I'm surrendered to the steel, and it is the easiest thing. Oh, my God, I'm so mad I fought it for so long. Like, I have no resistance being sponsored. I have no resistance to going to me. It's not like, oh, I have to go to meetings. Which meeting do I get to go to? I'm a committed one, but, like, I am at my best when I'm with you all. I am at my very best when I'm carrying this message to a person that's dying of alcoholism. I am on fire for that because people were able to do that for me and it saved my life. And I hope it stays that way. I mean, I don't know if I'll ever drink again. I hope to God I don't. If y'all, you know, if y'all hear I am, somebody come get me and put me in a cage or something, you know. But I surround myself with very strong women. I don't do sick anymore. If you're sick, you can carry your ass on down the road. I'm going to be at the well people. I protect my recovery. I've cut my family out of my life. I do call them. I try to be the best sister and the best daughter I can. They are very toxic, active alcoholics, and I realize I have a family of choice today. I have very strong women and men and people that are healthy. I need to know what that looks like, so I make sure I'm around that. Now, I'm not saying if you're, you know, I mean, I'll be around, but if you're wanting to get well, you know, and if you're a little sick, that's okay. But if, you know, people that want to, you know, mess around with this or whatever or keep going, you know, staying in the problem, I can't do that. I can't afford to do it. I don't want to die. I don't want to have to drink. So I do make it my business to go to solid meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous where they carry a clear message. You know, I mean, sometimes you go to ones, it's like, is this an AA meeting? And that's okay. I can go. I can be comfortable anywhere, but I need to be in the solution. So there's a lot of good meetings that carry a strong message of recovery of what we do here. And I think my time is up. You know, I know there's probably a lot of things, you know, I could have shared, but this is, I asked God to help me. I asked him to help me be useful, and, you know, whatever came out of my mouth, I guess what he wanted said, because that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So thanks.